Is this thing on? Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
We've switched roles today.
This is opposite day on Friday.
It is. We've decided to go, with casual attire. We've gone work casual with the podcast today on a Friday. Myself, Logan Weber, joined by Matthew Frizzell, as always, the same two guys that do the show every time.
We're the only two rookies here.
Right. We are doing the show as per usual. However, we're changing it around a little bit. I'm the guy sitting in front of the board here, running the show, so to speak, while Matt is sitting in my normal spot as the quote-unquote co-host for today. The reason being, I got into work today about 20 minutes ago, and Jenny Hopkins was here, the host of Coach's Perspective. I'm the producer for her show every week. She was here to do a promo with Ned Reynolds and Art Haynes. They're doing a show next Wednesday, or I guess 2 Wednesdays from now, September 15th. September 15th, a show to honor her dad, who just recently passed away. He's a legend in the Springfield area, played for the New York Jets. Played at the University of Arkansas, played for the New York Jets. He was a part of that Super Bowl team with the New York Jets. Joe Namath, of course, also a part of that team.
Ollie Green Joe.
Yep. And so her dad just recently passed away. So they're going to do a sort of tribute show for him, starting with a crossover episode, starting the second hour of Sports Talk from 5 to 6 on Wednesday, and then moving into Coach's Perspective from 6 to 7. So it's going to be an interesting show. That's why I was here doing the promo for them here in the Jock Studio, where we're at right now. And so I'm just sort of sitting in the desk in the chair doing that right in front of the stuff here. And so just figured it would be easier to just sort of, you know, for the first time, let me run the show and see if I can screw it up to
you'll probably run it a
no
hell of a
ends.
Lot better than I will or that I have.
It's really not that. I mean, all we have to do is put these little microphones up, put the edit thing up so that the music will play the intro music. That's all we got to do. That's it.
And then BS for the next, you know, however long we want to.
Exactly.
Because it's our podcast.
Exactly. However, on the other side of the podcast with some other endeavors we've got going on, of course, me, myself, tonight I have Springfield Catholic taking on McDonald County. That one just down the road here, down on 65.
Yep.
I'll be doing that game tonight on KWTO. That is the high school football game of the week for, I guess, KWTO this go-around, Jock later in the year, but for now, we'll just say Springfield, Zimmer Communications Springfield High School football game of the
week.
There
you go.
We'll just blanket statement that. You yourself have a game tonight and tomorrow as well, Matt.
Yeah, Friday, of course, it's Friday Night Lights, so high school football going on. COC matchup, Battle of the Tigers. There's like 37 different Tiger teams in this area, so two of them will be going up against each other, Republic and Willard in Willard. It'll be the home opener for the Willard Tigers, looking to bounce back after losing 39-13 against Carl Junction. And then Saturday, I will be in Bolivar, Missouri, doing my first ever college football broadcast. It'll be the Bearcats hosting the Texas Prairie Basin Falcons, I believe is their mascot. Looking forward to that. It's a noon kickoff, which means I have to get up early on a Saturday. I don't want to do that, Logan. It's a weekend. I want to sleep in. I want to sleep in and enjoy my weekend, but no, it's going to be a blast. I'm being facetious, of course. Going to be a blast. SBU looking to do some good things this season. A really highly offensively talented team. Really, their coach, Robert Clardy, has an offensive scheme, an offensive-based head coach. SBU led most of the GOVC last year in their shortened season, of course, in offense, like yards per game, points per game. So it'll be a fun brand of football to watch on the offensive end. The key for SBU is, well, can you stop them defensively enough to where your offense is going to be key in their game? So looking forward to a great weekend of football. And, of course, Logan, a lot of college football going on here in these next 4 days that started yesterday.
Yeah, sure did. But before we get to that, I just want to make you feel a little bit better, okay? Because me, myself,
I feel pretty bad right now in general, so yeah, go ahead.
You're not the only one that's going to have to be early up early tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah, you got some adult things you got to do.
Yeah, I've got nothing as fun as doing a college football game, that's for sure. Actually, about an hour ago, hour and a half ago, my fiance and I actually went to our new apartment building. We picked up our keys, we walked in, and we saw our apartment for the first time. So that we are officially in our first apartment together.
Yay.
Of course, like we've each, right, she's lived in apartments before me. I lived in apartments, you know, when we were going to college in separate places, right? I had an apartment I lived in college, and she did too. But for about the last 8 months, we have been living with her aunt and uncle, who have been so good to us and allowing us to sort of, you know, get comfortable, me especially, get comfortable in the Springfield area, allow us to begin living together with one another. While not having to worry about, you know, paying rent or anything like that, because she's still a college student. I was just getting into a job, and, you know, I have this job and I love this job. However, you know, I had to save up a lot of money before we could afford an apartment, for sure. But we've got that. So family's coming down tomorrow from the Kansas City area to help us move in. We're moving some stuff in today, but We're moving up, and, you know, starting
moving up in life.
Yeah, starting at about 8 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, we're gonna be moving stuff from our room at her aunt and uncle's house into our new apartment. So it's gonna be a long day.
Now I feel like an ass because I was just like complaining about being up at like 9 in the morning. Now you're gonna be up at like 6, 7 in the morning. When are you planning on getting up tomorrow?
I don't know quite yet because my parents aren't gonna get to town until about 10 o'clock in the morning. Her parents, I'm not really sure. They are very, very early in the morning type of people. Her brother and her dad have been working at the Ford plant up in Kansas City, basically, you know, since they turned 18. And so, aside from her dad, who was in the military and then came home and started working for Ford, but they've also owned a guttering and siding business for the better part of, I don't know, 15, 20 years at this point. I did a lot of work for them, especially when my fiance and I first started dating. You know, I don't know if it was some sort of like initiation thing, like let's see if the guy can handle it, which I could, surprisingly, even though it was awful work. It paid off in the long run, you know, made me appreciate being able to sit and talk about sports all day, that's for sure, rather than doing guttering and siding and roofing work or, you know, interior, like home construction work, stuff like that. But I mean, it was get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, have them pick me up at 5 and get to the house or the job site we were working by 6 a.m. I mean, that's just, they are up early in the morning. Like for me, 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning is very early for me.
Yeah.
You know, I still consider like 9 a.m. sort of early. Yeah, maybe that's the naivete of me. I'm more of a night owl type of person.
So am I.
But for them, it's like, if you slept in till 9 o'clock, you slept in. Like you should have been up 2 hours earlier and up and doing something. Like that's just how they operate. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were at our door at 8 o'clock in the morning.
They're built different.
Yeah, and it's a 3-hour drive. So I mean, it's one of those things. Like my family plans on leaving at 7. My parents plan on leaving our house, their house at 7, and getting here by 10:30. I mean, her family's probably up at 4, leave the house at 5 to get here by 8 o'clock. No stops, no nothing. Just straight through one of those things. So it's going to be interesting, but her parents are bringing her niece and nephew down.
Oh, yeah, your third
favorite
person. Which is awesome.
I haven't got to see them in forever, and it's funny because my fiance, the last time she went home, which was probably 2 weeks ago, her niece, who, like I said, just turned 6 years old yesterday, took her phone, and she likes to do videos on my fiance's phone all the time. So she's doing a video on her phone, and I called her or something, right?
Yeah.
And so she had to give the phone to my fiance. She answered it, right? We talked or whatever, hung up. She gave the phone back to her niece, and Cambry's sitting there talking on her video or whatever. She's acting like she's in a YouTube video or something. It's the cutest thing on the planet,
nice.
And I want to make her a YouTube account so bad. And I'll just edit and post these videos. I'm pretty sure I could turn her into a millionaire.
Make her an internet star.
She could definitely be YouTube famous. She'll start the video and be like, "Hi guys, welcome to this video. Hope you enjoy it." That is her. That is her catchphrase. That is how she starts every video.
That's perfect.
And it is the cutest thing. But she's sitting there talking, and she's like, "Mumu just had to answer a phone call." That's my fiance's nickname. Her name is Maggie. Maggie Moo, right? Moo Moo, that's her nickname for her niece and nephew. It's super cute. But she's like, Moo Moo had to answer the phone, and it was Logan. And then she goes on and just simultaneously melts my heart and rips my heart out at the same time. She's like, I miss him. I haven't got to see him in like a long time. And I was like, come on, man. Like that. It makes me feel good because like she misses me and she loves me and I love her to death too. But it's like, it makes me feel so bad inside because I'm like, I know I never get to see them anymore. And it like hurts my soul because I love those kids to death.
Yeah.
They're so cute, but they're finally going to come down. I mean, I legitimately couldn't tell you the last time I saw them. Maybe July? June maybe? I mean, it's probably been two, three, four months since the last time I saw them. So it's going to be really, really nice to be able to see them and enjoy that. But I don't even know where I went from this.
You talked about just being up early in the morning because I somewhat bitched and moaned about being up at like 9 or 10 in the morning for an SBU game at noon. And you were just like, well, Matthew, to put you in your place, I have to move in and, you know.
not to put you in your place anyway. I would, to be honest, when I was in college, I was the sideline reporter for the flagship station for Northwest Missouri State, where I went to school.
Yeah,
it was so much fun because it was a station. It was normally an NPR station, but on Saturdays or whenever there were football or basketball games going on, occasionally a volleyball game too, we had the Bearcat Radio Network, which was attached to the station that I worked for, right? So I was the sideline reporter for the Bearcat Radio Network for football. And I'll never forget. So the conference that Northwest Missouri State is in the MIAA, of course, right? What is SBU in the GLVC?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. The GLVC, where once MIAA schools go to after they're tired of Northwest beating on them. That's how we refer to it. SBU was an MIAA school. Lindenwood was an MIAA school, and they left because they were tired of getting beat up on.
Northwest Missouri State should just be a D1 school, considering the fact that they let a lot of D2 schools leave because of them.
I mean, that's fair. It's one of those things. It could happen sooner or later. It's just sort of weird because it's such a small town. It really is, and it's a really small college, too. I mean, there's 2,000 kids in the entire college, I think.
Say the enrollment at SBU right now, looking at my game notes for tomorrow, is 3,700.
Yeah, so. And I don't even think Northwest's enrollment is that big. And so when I was in college, the conference that they're in, the total enrollment is about 6,800.
Wow.
However, like half of those are online students. And then there's about another 1,000 that are like graduate students, right?
Okay.
But the conference that Northwest was in, the MIAA, there's schools from all over, right? There's like Northwest Missouri State, Central Missouri, Missouri Southern.
SEMO?
Down here in Joplin. No, SEMO isn't. I don't know what conference SEMO's in.
Okay.
So there's those three schools here in Missouri. Lincoln, Washburn is another one. And then there's some Kansas schools, Pitt State. Oh, who else? I'm trying to. Pitt State's in the Emporia State, Fort Hays, and then there's a random. There's the University of Nebraska Kearney, which is out in the middle of Nebraska, literally like central Nebraska,
dead center in Nebraska.
Yeah, and then there is, oh man, there is Central Oklahoma, and there's another Oklahoma school that I can't. It's located in Tahlequah.
Oh yeah. Just for those that are interested, any SEMO fans, they're in the Ohio Valley Conference, so you can hear people yelling at their screens.
Ohio Valley,
you dimwits!
The Ohio Valley. And then there's Northeastern State.
Unsubscribe!
Which is another Oklahoma school located in Tahlequah. Well, every other year, right, it's a home and away series with all these conference schools.
Sure.
And Northwest, the MIAA doesn't play non-conference games.
Really?
Yep, they only play conference games because there's like 14 schools in the conference or 12 schools. I think there's 12 schools in the conference, so they play 11 regular season games.
Fair enough.
Every other school in the conference, right? So, we would go to Tahlequah or Edmond, Oklahoma, which is where Central Oklahoma is, every other year. Those are legitimate 8.5 to 9 hour drives. So, I remember we had a 3 o'clock kickoff in Edmond, Central Oklahoma. Eight and a half hour drive, right? More like nine and a half if you include stops and things like that.
Yeah.
We left for Edmond 4 o'clock in the morning.
So you had to be up by around 3.
Yeah. Yep.
Respect.
Up at about 3 a.m.
on a Saturday.
up at 3 a.m. to get into a van, myself and four other dudes traveling to Edmond. 9 hour drive. We got there at 1 o'clock, and I think it was a 3:30 kickoff. So that gave us an hour to sort of get everything set up. Our pregame started an hour before the game, but yeah, it's weird. Right, yeah, I don't know if you ever had you had jobs in high school, right? Like,
sure.
Before you started working here.
Yeah.
Like, I'll never forget, I used to work at Walmart in college, too.
Oh, bless your soul.
So, there were shifts that I would work at Walmart where it was like a 7 or an 8 o'clock in the morning shift.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take everything I had to get out of bed to go to work, going to Walmart. But those 3 a.m., 4 a.m. trips to Edmond, Oklahoma, or Tahlequah, or Nebraska Kearney, or we went to Ferris State up in Michigan. Those trips, I would wake up wide awake, ready to go. Like, did not bug me at all. I was so ready. I didn't need coffee.
Because you were doing what you wanted.
I was so excited to get up and go, regardless of what time it was. And that's sort of when you realize, like, oh, well, this thing is miserable. This thing absolutely sucks. This thing, I get up way earlier for it, but I love getting up and doing it.
Exactly.
I have no issue with this. And that was, I already knew that this was sort of what I wanted to do. I mean, I was going to school for it, so obviously I thought this was what I wanted to do. But that first trip we took, 9 hours, to Edmond, Oklahoma, and up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I got up so quickly. I have never felt like that with anything else I've ever done.
I feel like I'll have that same energy whenever I wake up tomorrow morning.
You probably will.
Especially right after a broadcast. You know, usually after a broadcast, I'm kind of drained or whatever. Like, I'm just, like, ready to go to bed. But I'm sure, like, whenever I go to bed at, like, at midnight or 1 and be up at 9, I'll be, like, wide awake and ready.
Yeah.
And that's when you really know you love what you're doing. I do want to know, though, how much caffeine was consumed between the five of you guys on the way to Edmond.
Oh, a lot. Yeah. It's definitely a lot.
In the thousands range, or yeah, probably more than that.
The numerous gas station stops or McDonald's drive-thrus and whatever else, and oh man, it was so much fun. It was exhausting.
Wouldn't trade it for
times.
The world, though.
No, absolutely not. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, if they were to offer me like $40,000 to be the sideline reporter permanently for Northwest Missouri State, I would literally commute from Springfield to Maryville to call games. That's how much fun I had doing it.
Yeah,
sideline reporting was so much more fun than I thought it was gonna be. I love doing this stuff, the talk radio aspect of it. I love calling games, doing play-by-play and color. And I also really love doing the sideline stuff. I mean, it is. It's so much fun to sort of, you know, catch storylines and stuff that maybe some other people won't and things like that. I really did enjoy the sideline aspect of it.
Yeah. One thing I love the most about broadcasting, it's not the money. It's not about the teams that I cover. It's the travel. I love going to different places, new places. Now, with high school, it's a little different because in my gig, they just play teams in the COC. So you go to the same cities just about every year. But still, man, traveling to new places, I'm really looking forward to where I get to the stage where you were at Northwest Missouri State, where you get to travel outside the state, you know, go to places like, say, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, maybe even Tennessee, like just anywhere around this area. I'm looking forward to going to that aspect of my career, and I'll get there at some point. I know I will.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We've spent like the last 19 minutes talking about our self-indulgence and, you know, your cute little cousin. I'm sorry, Cambry.
Niece. Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, niece. Yeah.
Yep. So. And her little brother, Asen, who's 2.
Oh.
He's cute.
Oh, he is?
He is, though, I will say, he's reaching that point, right? You know what they say about kids in their 2s.
Oh, right?
The old terrible,
yeah,
2s. He's getting to that point. Still super cute. He loves to take pictures. He loves to cheese, right? That's what he calls his smiling,
yeah,
right? When
cheesing,
he takes a picture,
yeah,
he's cheese. And he does. He smiles so, I mean, absolutely huge. He's got big old dimples in his cheeks. Cutest little kid. But he's starting to have issues with sharing. He's reached a point now where if he sees his sister playing with something, he wants to play with it too. But she's playing with it, so she doesn't want to share, right? She was playing with it first and on all that stuff,
of course,
is understandable. So when she says no, or when somebody tells him, like, Asen, let her play with it, boom, it is waterworks. It is game over.
Oh, man.
But it's one of those things that with Cambry, she cried when she was little. I've never heard a human being, let alone a child, cry the way she would. I mean, it was loud. It was tornado siren loud. It was tsunami siren loud. Like, I mean, it was unreal how loud she would cry. She wouldn't have it. She threw fits all the time. She has issues with, like, being outside and, like, being around people she doesn't know. She has issues with that. But, so, like, when Asen throws a fit, I'm like, it's not that bad. Like, I almost just don't notice it for a while. And then eventually I end up noticing it, but it's one of those, like, I don't notice it. Maybe it's just because I was so used to it with Cambry that I'm used to it now, or it's just because he doesn't cry or he's not as loud as she was, but man, oh man, those kids, I tell you.
I know this is going to sound terrible, but whenever I'm around little kids and they have fits like that or whatever, I just start losing my mind. Like, I know you're supposed to turn a blind ear to it or a deaf ear to it in a blind eye, but like, it's hard not to notice the fact that someone is just screaming and crying about, you know, the simplest, like, little thing or whatever.
Yeah, and that's
talking
just
in a group of adults, and I'm just, like, I myself am trying to hold myself back from just having a fit myself because I can't stand listening to these kids just crying and screaming. I just want to have a conversation with my uncle or whatever.
I just got so used to it because, yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, Cambry was born when I was still in high school.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I was with her, right? I was with them every day. I saw her almost every day, right? Out of a 7-day week, I saw her probably 6 out of 7 days. And, like, during summers and stuff, every single day, right? I would see her every single day. I just got sort of used to it at a certain point. And maybe it doesn't bug me as much now because I saw her every day and I don't see them as much anymore. I don't see Asen nearly as much as I saw Cambry when she was this age.
Right.
But it's just one of those things, man. I tell you. And they're so cute and I can't wait to see them and I can't wait. My fiance was so excited today. We walked into the apartment and we're looking around. We're looking at all the stuff and everything. And, you know, she was just grinning from ear to ear. Just so excited that we finally, you know, have a place of our own. We just celebrated our 7th anniversary yesterday.
Yep.
And we finally have a place of our own for the first time. 7 years we've been together. I'm 23. She turns 22 next month. So we've nearly spent a third of our lives together. Like, that's crazy to think about. And we finally have a place of our own for the first time. And it's a pretty exciting thing. You want to know what else is exciting?
Talking sports?
Yeah. More specifically,
college football.
Talking college football.
Yeah.
Bingo. Before we get into the Division I football, we've talked a little bit about SBU. We've talked some GLVC, some Ohio Valley.
Yeah.
We talked a little MIAA as well. Want to give a huge shout out to the old alma mater, Northwest Missouri State, had their season opener yesterday against
on Thursday?
On a Thursday. They usually always do it that way.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Against Fort Hays State. Got a big win in that one. It was a defensive slugfest. 15-7 was the final score.
Or boring. One of the two, you could put it that way.
I mean, yeah, but it's one of those things, you know. If winning is boring, then Northwest is super boring.
That's true. Yeah. Like, as a broadcaster, though, like, if you're a neutral broadcaster and you see, like, 15-7, you're just like, that's a defensive game, but, like, man, I want to see scoring. I want to see a lot of things going on, but, yeah, I digress.
Just to show you even further that this was a defensive slugfest, Northwest opens up with the ball, stalls out at about midfield. They punt down Fort Hays at the 1, get a safety.
So that's how they got their
first,
15, yeah.
Like, the first points of the season for Northwest Missouri State, safety, defensive points. That just goes to show you what kind of a defensive matchup I'm talking about. 15-7 was the final score. So big shout out, number 4 team in the country, Northwest Missouri State, catches a win in week 1. It wasn't pretty, but it was a win nonetheless.
Yeah. Week 1 games usually aren't pretty because, like, you got guys that are, you know, week 1 jitters, sometimes with a new coach. Like, I know they don't have a new coach, but, like, it's just a new season, new implementation of planning, that kind of stuff. But, no, good job by they're the Bearcats, right?
Yep.
Yeah, good job by the Bearcats to pick up a week 1 dub, and hopefully they have a lot more coming down in the future. And being ranked number 4, I'm pretty sure they will.
Yeah, absolutely. B-E-A-R-C-A-T-S. Bearcats, Bearcats, go Bearcats.
I apologize. I don't know that chant.
That's all right.
But honestly, like, where is it? Look, you said it was in Maryville, right?
Maryville.
Maryville.
Maryville. M-A-R-Y-V-I-L-L-E.
Yeah, I've
not. We just call it the Ville. Or Titletown, whatever you prefer.
Oh, of course you'd call it Titletown because there's
six, a lot. Six national championships in football since 1998. Three national championships in basketball in the last 4 years. Probably could have been four in a row if the tournament wouldn't have got canceled via COVID.
Thanks, COVID, yep.
So, yeah. It's a lot of national championships.
Too bad it's not like a T-name town. Called like Titletown, you know, something like Townsend or something like that. But
Titleville, I don't know.
Yeah.
We just call it the Ville or Titletown. That's what it's referred to as. However, you mentioned that I will say, that game was a defensive slugfest, not a lot of scoring in that one. However, you look at these top 25 teams in college football in the FBS level that had games last night, it was scoring on top of scoring. Of course, the big game, Ohio State, Minnesota, that was a barn burner. I mean, it was a shootout. 45-31, the final in that one. Ohio State gets the win. Minnesota had the lead at halftime. 14-10 was the score at halftime, but Ohio State just stepped on the gas. Scored 21 in the third, 14 in the fourth. I mean, 10 points in the first half. You scored 35 in the second half.
Yeah.
Just literally outmuscled this Minnesota team. C.J. Stroud was great in his first start. He only completed 13 passes, 22 attempts, so he's about 60% completion percentage. 13 pass completions for 294 yards and 4 touchdowns. Big play central
indeed
for Ohio State last night. You know, for Minnesota, the player of the game for them has to be Muhammad Ibrahim. Their running back, 30 carries, 163 yards, 2 touchdowns. He got hurt late in that game. Haven't really heard sort of what the injury status is on him, how severe it is. But that's got to be sort of nerve-wracking if you're Minnesota. That, I mean, he's the key cog in your offense. And if he's out for an extended period of time, that's really going to hurt you if you're the Golden Gophers in your hunt to win the Big Ten West.
Yeah, I was somewhat following that game. I was at a venue last night, and I saw, like, right before I went to bed, score was 14-10 in favor of Minnesota. I'm thinking, that's a bit of a defensive showcase. If Minnesota can keep it, you know, in the 20s range in the second half and, you know, continue to, you know, put up another 14 points, they can win this game. Well, you can't do that when you give up 35 points in the second half. And rightfully so, Ohio State is the more talented team. They're ranked fourth in the nation. Not by, you know, a coincidence. They're ranked fourth because they're really good, and they have a lot of talent. They got a lot of good things going on over there. So, a good fight put up by Minnesota, but just overmatched, over-talented, outplayed, lack of term there, by Ohio State. So, how can you not see them not being in, like, the college football playoff, Ohio State? I really don't see how you can.
The end-all, be-all out of it all is, you know, they are a team that's going to, they're going to run the table in the Big Ten.
Of course.
They are. I mean, the Big Ten is a very talented football conference, but Ohio State is just sort of at another level than a lot of these teams right now. And, you know, if you win the Big Ten, you're going to have a really good shot to make the college football playoff, as is with any conference, right? If you win the SEC, you're more than likely going to get in. You know, if Oklahoma wins the Big 12, they're more than likely going to get in. The Pac-12, Clemson in the ACC, yes. If Clemson wins the ACC, they'll get in. I don't know if there's another team in the ACC that if they won it, unless they go undefeated, of course. You know, if a team goes undefeated, wins their conference, they should get in. A Power 5, at least.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, Notre Dame, which plays, like, two or three good teams and then a bunch of cupcakes and somehow... Right, they basically play in a group of five conference with all the opponents that they play, and then they play like two non-conference games against good teams. And
lose them.
And they somehow get into the playoff and they lose by 40. Same thing with like the Big 12 at this point. Like, Oklahoma's really good.
Because the other conferences know how to play defense. Yeah. The Big 12 doesn't.
Exactly. Oklahoma's really good. Iowa State is really good this year. Aside from that, not really a whole lot going on in the Big 12. Okay, Kansas is bad. K-State is bad. TCU is bad. So, yeah, of course, Oklahoma is going to go undefeated, and they're going to win the Big 12.
Baylor will be okay. Oklahoma State will be
okay. And they're going to get in, and then they're going to have to play an Alabama or a Clemson or Ohio State, and they're going to get beat by 30. That's just how it works. Ohio State, yes, they are a top four team. I don't think there's any argument for that. You know, at least talent-wise, they showed it last night with the 45-31 win. If they lose a couple of games throughout the season, then that can change, absolutely. But based on what I saw last night, and just looking at the talent they have on their roster, they should be a team that definitely competes for a college football playoff spot again. Some other top 25 matchups we saw last night. Coastal Carolina took on the Citadel. As can be expected, Coastal Carolina won that one 52-14. Grayson McCall and Shamari Jones led the way for Coastal Carolina. McCall went 16 of 19 for 262 yards and a touchdown. Jones, 9 carries for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns, over 10 yards a carry for Shamari Jones. So, I mean, that's a pretty impressive feat for them.
No kidding.
Number 24, Utah, took on Weber State, won that one 40-17.
It's Weber. I thought it was Weber.
Yep, Weber State. Listen, as somebody whose last name is Weber, I wanted it to be Weber State for the longest time. Until a guy got drafted in the lottery by the Portland Trailblazers by the name of Damian Lillard.
Oh,
he went to Weber
yeah.
State, and I thought it was, up until I was about 14, I thought it was Weber State. I always thought it was Weber State. Until Lillard got drafted, and everybody was like, oh, it's Weber State, Weber State. I was like, oh, well, that just ruins
it
for me.
That's a buzzkill.
Thanks. Yeah. I was really hoping that there was, like, you know, somebody, some distant relative of mine deep down in my family's history had a college named after him, but yeah, I guess not.
You should just deny it and just keep calling it Weber State.
Absolutely. I used to make jokes about that all the time. Like, Weber State, you know, my great-great-great uncle started Weber State. You know, I'm related by marriage to Chris Weber. Yeah, I know there's an extra B in there, but we'll just ignore that. yeah. My uncle owns Weber Grills, you know. And then it's funny because there's like the Weber, right? The Weber Outdoor Company. They make like grills and stuff like that. Well, there's also another outdoor company called Coleman, which is my little brother's name. So my brother's name is Coleman Weber. So it's like my brother's name.
The money is raking in. The money is pouring in.
Yeah, pouring in. Yeah, absolutely.
Get the name right.
Something like that. No, I'm not related to any of those people, believe me. Like I said, Utah got a win against Weber State, 40-17. Charlie Brewer, 19 of 27, 233 yards, 2 touchdowns. Tavion Thomas, 12 carries, 107 yards, 2 touchdowns for Utah. And that one, and then the last real top 25 matchup that we saw was Arizona State, ranked 25th in the country. They took on Southern Utah, won that one 41-14. Really, it was the running attack for Arizona State that really got them going in this one, led by Rachaad White. 7 carries, 64 yards, 2 touchdowns for him in that one. Another top 25 team going up tonight, an ACC matchup on a Friday. North Carolina taking on Virginia Tech. North Carolina ranked number 10 in the country, which I know, I mean, if you were to just like pull up ESPN and look up college football scores and you saw North Carolina was ranked 10th, you would think you were on the college basketball page. It would really, really leave you scratching your head. But, you know, Mack Brown has done a tremendous job turning around that North Carolina football program, taking them to heights that maybe North Carolina football hasn't ever seen before.
Does North Carolina and Clemson play in the same conference in the ACC or in the same division?
I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I would imagine yes.
Because, like, you talked about how, you know, Clemson will probably just run the tables in the ACC, being the third-ranked team, I believe Clemson is. I wonder, like, how much stock will be put into the fact that North Carolina is ranked number 10, and maybe, you know, if they go undefeated and beat Clemson, and Clemson is, you know, 9-1 or 10-1 at the end of the season, maybe North Carolina gets a playoff berth.
They are not. They are in opposite divisions.
Oh, damn.
So, I mean, theoretically, they could play a crossover game. But, I mean, just looking at this, the ACC Atlantic, which is the division that Clemson is in, is definitely the weaker of the two. So, Clemson is in that division. Florida State is in that division. We'll see if they can
get... They haven't been relevant since Jameis Winston, yeah.
We'll see if they can get back to that point. you'd imagine they probably could, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Boston College, North Carolina State, Louisville, Syracuse, Wake Forest.
Trash.
And then the Coastal Division, you've got North Carolina, Pitt, Virginia, Virginia Tech.
I forgot about Virginia. Yeah, they could be somewhat decent.
Miami, Georgia Tech.
Is Virginia
and
football
Duke.
Good?
They have been.
Okay, I'm
they've
thinking.
Had, yeah, they've had
once
good
again,
years.
Once again, I'm in like basketball, but I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, Virginia's good in basketball, but are they good in football? I guess they are.
Yeah, they've had good years, to be honest. I mean, they've never been like a real threat to win a national championship or anything, at least not recently that I can think of. But they're a bowl team. They're a bowl contender every year.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mac Brown is now going into his third season at North Carolina. They went 7-6 in his first year there, 4-4 in the ACC, tied for third in the Coastal. They won their bowl game, the Military Bowl. Last season, they went 8-4. 7-3 in the ACC and lost in the Orange Bowl. So this season they return a lot of talent. Preseason ranked top 10, taking on Virginia Tech. So big ACC game.
Good job, Texas.
To open up their year. 5 o'clock kickoff in that one. North Carolina right now is a 5.5 point favorite. The over under in that one, 63.5.
My God.
The sports bettors in Vegas expecting a lot of scoring in that
one. A shootout, which is great to watch as a football fan and good to call as a football broadcaster.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
And what's his name again? It's Brown, but what's his first
Mac
name?
Mac Brown.
Yeah, Mac Brown. Yeah, good job, Texas, letting him go. Changing a basketball school into a good powerhouse in football. Horns down to that.
Always. Yeah, always. Always a good excuse.
Always and forever.
And anytime you can find a good excuse to use a horns down, absolutely do it. You know, we're not a part of the Big 12. They can't fine us. Nope.
We're in, I guess, SEC country, if we're talking about, like, Power 5, because, like, I guess Mizzou's kind of prominent here, though we're based in Springfield, so we're more part of the FCS, and which is
fair.
Missouri State, who is playing Oklahoma State on Saturday. So
yep, it's Springfield. I mean, the Springfield area is sort of like smack dab in the middle. You know, it's like half Big 12, half SEC. You know, because like Kansas and Kansas State are to the west of us there, right? Fairly close, and then to the east, a couple of hours, you've got Columbia. Well, in that couple hours, four hours, three and a half.
I don't know, dude. I've never been to Columbia.
You've never been to Columbia?
Not that I remember. Now, wow. I will say, like, back in, like, the early 2000s when I was, like, 4 or 5, my alma mater, Ozark, they played in back-to-back state championships in girls basketball. Excuse me. And my sisters were managers on those teams. So we would go up and go to their basketball arena and watch their games. But I don't remember much of it, so no. To my knowledge, I have not been to Columbia that I remember. And like, and that's the thing I want to bring up as well. I know I'm getting off track here, but like, whenever like I say I've been to someplace new, my mother will be like, "No, we went there whenever you were one or two." No, I wasn't. If I don't remember it, then I wasn't there. Period. Fair. Exclamation point.
Fair. That's a great point.
Like, come on. You expect me to believe stuff when I was like one or two, and I do have a fairly good memory. I have a better memory than most, you know, regular humans, I'll say that much. But like, oh yeah, you went, I one time last year or 2 years ago, I broadcasted a game in Aurora, Missouri, and I was like, first time being in the great city of Aurora. And my mom was like, oh, this wasn't your first time, we went there and visited when you were one. Yeah, you visited, I was just a spectator, I didn't know we were there. Come on, if you don't remember it, you weren't there, period. End of debate or question. All right. Sorry, I got sidetracked there.
No, you're fine.
I had to air my grievances there. I should have made that my therapy session Thursday. Instead of talking about how SeatGeek is trash now with their website. So
fair. That's fair.
All right.
But got some, you know, talking about college football we had yesterday. Big game today with North Carolina, Virginia Tech. And then, you know, we're in full swing come tomorrow. And like I said, moving into the new apartment tomorrow. Doing some moving in today, but for the most part, doing the bulk of it tomorrow. But decided to take the day in Wednesday. Made sure to get an appointment set up, make sure that the internet is up and activated tomorrow morning at the apartment.
Of course.
Specifically by 2:30.
All right.
Because the Iowa Hawkeyes, season opener.
Is that 2:30?
Tomorrow, it's a 3 o'clock kickoff,
oh,
I think.
3
but like
okay.
2:30 for like the pregame and stuff
sure,
like that. Right?
Sure, yeah.
3 o'clock kickoff. Taking on Indiana, number 17 versus number 18.
That should be good.
Going to be a good game. Can't wait.
Hopefully, I'll be home by SVU by then, and I can maybe watch that, or maybe even get in on one of the 3,000 stations we have here at Zimmer Communications or in the Springfield area.
That is a fair point. Hulu Live TV is a go-to. That's what my family has. That's what we have here at the station. So it's a beautiful thing. You get a smart TV, right? Like, I mean, I use my parents' Hulu Live TV. We have a smart TV that we use. So all I have to do is cast whatever I'm watching on Hulu to the TV from my phone, and I've got Hulu Live TV.
Yeah.
And I don't have to pay for
it. The modern advancement of technology. Wow.
And I don't have to pay for it.
Meanwhile, my parents struggle with trying to watch cable or watch antenna TV, and I tried to set up a subscription for my mother, and I apologize. I know she listens to the podcast, but she treated that like the plague. She did not want any part. You know, we bought her a Hulu like gift card for like, you know, 20, 30 bucks, whatever, and we tried to set it up for her, but she was like, I don't want this to interfere with my internet storage or internet data. I don't want to deal with it. I'm just like, Mom. You should have seen the reaction she had whenever I set up her new router there. She upgraded her internet, right? Because, you know, like I said, she had, like, data issues or whatever, like, over usage. So she went with the plan where we got, like, unlimited data, and our speed got boosted up from, like, 50 megabytes to 200 megabytes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, if you update your settings with your internet, you're going to need new equipment, like a new router, a new modem, or whatever. So Suddenlink ships us this router/modem, because nowadays it's just in one total piece, a router/modem. So they shipped that out to us, and it sat there in my living room for like 2 to 3 months. Like, she didn't want to touch it. I was too lazy to touch it. So we just kind of went about it. Well, internet was still pretty hot garbage. It was still struggling. It was on the struggle bus. So I just said, you know, screw it. One day I just finally did it. Set up the new router. Oh, man, she about had a conniption whenever she came home. She was freaking out. She was like, oh, you know, like, what's going on? Like, why is everything different? Why is my old router on the bed and this new thing is on my desk? You know, why did you do this? Why? Susan, Mom, relax. I figured it out. It's all okay.
Relax. You said why so many times. I thought that, like, the button on the keyboard was getting stuck.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you ever see, right? Like, a button on the keyboard gets stuck. Or, like, this morning, I woke up at about 6 a.m., woke up, did some game prep for my game tonight, and the cat...
Casey?
Right, yep. We brought him in last night. So we've been bringing him in, like, sort of periodically, getting him used to it. Well, last night, we actually brought him in, and he stayed in our room overnight. He slept with us and everything. But I woke up about 6 a.m., and... Right, he was right up with me. He was ready to go. But he wanted to play, and he wanted attention and this and that. And I'm, like, working on my computer. Well, he's, like, biting and scratching at my hands. Like, hey, dude, like, would you stop messing with that thing and, like, pay attention to me, all right? Because, like, I'm cute. Pay attention to me.
Love me, yeah.
Well, he started, like, walking across my computer.
I love seeing that on people's stories,
and
yeah.
So he's, like, walking across my computer and hitting. I had, like, 75 backslashes on my freaking computer on this Google Doc that I was trying to do. And I'm like, get off the computer, please. And so when you said why about 67 times, that's what made me think of that.
You just holding down the Y key
exactly
on the keyboard. But no, it's all good. She doesn't panic about it now, but, you know. And that's just the thing. She's like, she is, you know, of age where, you know, she's not fully induced into modern technology. So I understand her being worried, but, you know, the whole having a panic attack and just about internet, something that simple. I'm just like, Mom, I've figured it out. Don't worry about it. Like, so.
Speaking of
that was a fun experience. Yeah, go
speaking
ahead.
Of panic attacks.
Is it time to have one for a Cardinal fan? Or
no, I have a panic attack every night whenever somebody that's not in the top three of the Royals lineup has to hit.
Oh, yeah? Whenever Hunter Dozier or Michael Taylor or, you know.
Edward Olivares, Carlos Santana. Ugh! Royals lost last night, 2-4.
Got swept at home.
Got swept.
By the Indians.
One of those things. Tristan McKenzie had his first start back from injury. He went 6 full innings, gave up 1 earned run on 2 hits, 6 strikeouts. Mike Minor went again for the Royals. 5 innings pitched, 5 hits given up, 3 runs, 2 of them earned, 4 strikeouts, including one of those earned runs was a home run. One of those things. Yeah, I mean, it's just Whit Merrifield batting .279 in the leadoff spot. He went 1-for-4. Nicky Lopez went 0-for-3 last night. but he's still batting .289 on the year. Salvador Perez went 1-for-4. He's batting .273, but, I mean, he's got nearly 40 home runs. Andrew Benintendi went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts last night. He's now batting .250. Carlos Santana had a hit last night, but still only went 1-for-4. He's batting .223. Michael Taylor went 0-for-3, batting .242. Edward Olivares, 1-for-4 last night with an RBI. He's batting .222. Hunter Dozier went 2-for-4 last night with an RBI, but he's still batting just .206. Emmanuel Rivera went 0-for-3 last night. He's now batting .256. Ryan O'Hearn pinch hit for him. Got out in that one plate appearance. He is batting .228. So, .279, .289, .273 are your top three hitters in your lineup. And then nobody else is batting above .256. Including Carlos Santana, Edward Olivares, and Hunter Dozier, and Ryan O'Hearn, who are all batting less than .230. And Dozier's batting less than .210.
That's tough.
The minor league system cannot get to the majors soon enough.
Well, you don't want to rush them, though.
I know I don't want to rush them, but sheesh. It's just not going well.
In due time, my friend. In due time.
Tyler Zuber pitched. He went a full inning pitched. Only gave up one hit. No earned runs allowed. Piamps had another appearance for the Royals last night. Joel.
Blue Jays legend,
yep, yeah. Yep, Joel Piamps. Went one inning. Gave up one hit, struck out two, no earned runs. Chris Bubich went 2 full innings, allowed 1 earned run on 1 hit, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. Oh, man, at this point, I'm just paying attention to the Royals because, like we talk about it on the podcast, and I want to see what Salvi and Nicky Lopez are able to do. You know, Adalberto Mondesi did not play last night, as was evidenced by, I never mentioned him in the stat line from yesterday. You know, they're still very much hinting at the fact that they're sticking with Nicky Lopez and Whit Merrifield at short and second. You know, I want to see Mondesi play some third in this last month or so of the season. You know, we're coming up on now, it's September 3rd. The last game of the year for the Royals is October 3rd. There is exactly 1 month left in this season. I want to see Adalberto Mondesi get some run at third base. I'm not saying all 30 games need to be at third base or 29 games or whatever it is. But I would really like to see him get, you know, 10 or 12 games at third base just to see how he handles it.
Sure.
You know, 3-game series against the White Sox starting tonight. Carlos Hernandez pitching for the Royals. Dallas Keuchel going for the White Sox.
Hopefully Keuchel doesn't get PTSD from his experience with the Astros against the Royals like he faced him in 2015.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, hopefully he does, but I highly doubt it. He's on a very, very good team, and the Royals team of today.
But he hasn't had that good of a year, though.
No, he hasn't, but he's still a great talent.
Ah, good talent.
The Royals team of this season is not the Royals team of 2015.
Obviously.
Yeah, he's 8-7 on the year. His ERA is not good. 5.
Yeah, 5.01.
He's got a 5.00 ERA. That game is at home for the Royals, in which Keuchel has a 5.46 ERA on the road. So, you know, that
he's playing at a hitter ballpark, though. That's fair.
He is. That's certainly the case.
Or a pitcher-friendly ballpark.
Yes,
yeah,
might yeah. Be. Definitely not a home run ballpark.
Well, Salvador Perez
may
look
pretty
small.
Tell Salvi yet. Yeah. Try to tell Salvi that. He would.
White Sox are minus 125 on this odds. If I could, I would put some chocolate chips on this.
Some chocolate chips? Don't make me hungry, man. That's a bad
idea.
Well,
I'm using it as a term for money. But minus 125,
I see what you
yeah.
Did. I see what you did.
Yeah, that's a famous term from the legendary ISK, Ned Reynolds. So
there you go.
Yeah, I work with him every morning. And
you pick up on some things.
I do.
Some quotes and stuff that he has to say.
I'm a sponge, dude. You got to soak it in, especially when you're
soak
talking
it
with,
in.
You got, especially when you're talking with legendary radio show host like Ned Reynolds, yes.
That's fair. On the flip side of that, Cardinals beginning a 3-game series against the Milwaukee Brewers tonight.
Oof.
You mentioned before we got started on the podcast, the NL player pitcher of the month is going in this ballgame tonight, Matt.
The ageless wonder, Adam Wainwright. 40 years old and pitching like he's 30. My guy is just, and look, I know I can see all the hate. I saw all the haters on Twitter and Instagram,
It should have been Logan Webb from the Giants. Wainwright only played the Pirates.
Shut up, stupid trolls. You got nothing else better to do in your life than just bitch and moan on Twitter. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I feel like it was well-deserved for Wainwright. Going tonight, tonight, first pitch set for 7-10, a 13-7 record with a 2.97 ERA. And in today's game, Logan, it's really tough to have an ERA below 3, nonetheless below 4. And Wainwright's doing it right now at the age of 40. And what's also crazy about him, I allude to the fact that he's 40. He's not doing it with velocity like a lot of these pitchers are doing. He's topping out at like 88, 89 on his fastball, but he is pitching. He is not throwing. He is mixing his speeds. He, of course, has that good old Uncle Charlie, probably the best curveball in all baseball. Excuse me, getting choked up about this. In the last 10 years, you got to get choked up for the fact that Wainwright's still having this much success in a Cardinal uniform for this long, and he's continuing to do it in this season, and hopefully continue to do it tonight. In Milwaukee, Freddy Peralta, a part of their big three of pitching stars there at Milwaukee, will go tonight. Of course, Peralta being paired with being a trio of Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff. And those three, of course, a big part of the reason why the Brewers are first in the NL Central. But look, I alluded to this yesterday on the podcast. If the Cardinals are going to show that they're going to be contenders in September and make a run instead of pretenders, they got to start winning games against teams that are better than them. And they're going to have a lot of opportunities to do that in this month because they're facing the Brewers 10 times, who I said are first in the NL Central. Then they come home and then they'll play the Dodgers, the Reds, the Padres. Before that, they'll play the Mets, who are still somewhat in contention for an NL wildcard spot. So, you know, you got to get hot the right time, Logan. And right now, better late than never, or time is now for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, we always say, and we've said it on the podcast several times, you know, Father Time is undefeated. Well, he's going 10 rounds with Adam Wainwright right now.
Uh-huh.
This man, Adam Wainwright, is doing absolutely everything in his power to prove that Father Time deserves one L. I mean, it's unreal what he's been able to do throughout his career, to be honest with you. He's had 180 wins, 105 losses. He's got a win-loss percentage of 63.2%, a career ERA of 3.35. And, you know, it looked like there was about a 3 or 4 year stretch there where it looked like Wainwright's career was going to come to a screeching halt.
Uh-huh.
2016 through 2019, he had ERAs of 4.62, 5.11, 4.46, and 4.19. And you kind of thought, is this the end for Adam Wainwright, you know? A 4.19 ERA in 2019. He went 14-10 despite that, but still, a 4.19 ERA is not exactly what we've seen from Wainwright throughout his career.
And you bring that up, Logan. It reminds me, I went to a Cardinals-Giants game in late September, I believe in 2018, either that or 17, and Wainwright started that game, and he pitched probably the best game that he had of that season. Like you said, he had ERAs of close to 4.5, 5. And whenever Mike Schilt took the ball from him in that Giants game, everyone in the stadium gave him a standing ovation. And I turned to my dad, and I said, "Dad, this may have been the last time we've seen Wainwright pitch as a Cardinal." And that is sad, especially when, you know, we're young adults right now, but growing up in our childhood, these were the players that we idolized. And the fact that, you know, we had that moment, and thankfully it didn't happen. He's still pitching now and pitching well, but thankfully that moment didn't happen. But it kind of took a surreal turn. And talking about his month of August, he went 5-1 with a 1.43 ERA. Having a 1 ERA in the bullpen is, you know, pretty good or whatever. Having it in the starting rotation as a starter, it's very good. It's great. It's outstanding. 5-1, 1.43 ERA in 6 games started. He had one complete game shutout, that Greg Maddux-esque shutout he had against the Padres. Against the Pirates, in which he threw, I think, like 88, 89 pitches. It was some absurd number. 44 innings pitched, 29 hits, 7 earned runs. Only gave up one home run, walked six in 1 month. You walked 6 batters in 6 games started? That's really good. And you struck out 36. So, deservingly so, Adam Wainwright, the player of the month, or the pitcher of the month for the NL.
And yeah.
He's going tonight for the Cardinals.
Going up against, like you mentioned, Freddy Peralta, who's been so good this season, 9-3, 2.45 ERA. It's sort of interesting this is really his first true starting. Like, he's never really been a starter.
Peralta, no.
No, I mean, he started 14 games in 2018, his rookie year. But then the next two seasons, 2019, he appeared in 39 games, only 8 starts. And then last season, 15 games appeared in, 1 start. So he's been primarily a reliever for the last 2 years, but this year came out as a starter, fully engrossed in that rotation, and has been absolutely lights out. 121 and a third innings pitched, 164 strikeouts, which is unreal. I mean, he's a strikeout pitcher.
Uh-huh.
There's
as
no
starter,
doubt about
which is
it.
Tough, yeah.
Every year that he has been in Major League Baseball, he has had more strikeouts than innings pitched. Every year. You know, and that's the mark of a true strikeout pitcher. A guy that is near as many strikeouts as innings pitched or more. You know, and he is more than that. You know, it's one of those things. It's interesting that a guy can go from being a reliever to a starter like that. You don't see that often.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's the other way around. A guy goes from being a starter, he starts to lose some of that stuff, so he goes into the relief aspect of it.
Well, if you're a younger pitcher, it's more likely for you being a reliever to a starter.
Right.
Wainwright started out as the bullpen pitcher.
I didn't know. I just know, like, Royals guys.
Sure.
Guys like Wade Davis.
Yeah.
James Shields, Irvin Santana.
Yeah.
Yep. They've gone from being starters to being bullpen guys.
Yeah.
You know, and Wade Davis was a starter for a long time, got moved to the bullpen, and there was about a 2-year stretch there where he might have been the best closer in baseball.
Yeah, and that's how it goes in pitching. You know, usually they train you to be starters, like whenever you first get drafted, they like work out your arms or whatever. And then if you're not really working out well in the minor leagues, they'll put you in a reliever there. But if you're starting really well, if you're a starting pitcher and you're doing really well in minor leagues, Major League Baseball clubs will do probably two of different things. They'll either make you a reliever instantly and just kind of work your way up to a starting role whenever a spot becomes available, or they'll put you in the starting rotation immediately, and if it doesn't work out immediately, they'll put you in the bullpen and then bring you back as a starter.
Right. So when Wade Davis was traded to Kansas City in 2013,
He was a starter for the Rays, yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about this briefly, and then, you know, we'll hop up out of here.
No, we're getting close to an hour here, yeah.
Yep. In 2013, he went 8-11 for the Royals with a 5.32 ERA. Started in 24 games. The next season, he appeared in 71 games for the Kansas City Royals, 72 innings pitched, had an ERA of 1. 1.
On the dot. 1.
I mean, that's unreal. And then the next season, 2015, he appeared in 69 games, 67 and a third innings pitched, 0.94 ERA. 2016, 45 games appeared in, 43 and a third innings pitched, 1.87 ERA.
Wade Davis has a Royal. We'll never
that is a 3-year stretch there where he goes from being a starter to a reliever, and a 3-year stretch where he might have been the best reliever in baseball.
Yeah, Wade Davis was just a different animal in Kansas City. It was unbelievable to watch.
Absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. For a guy that was a starter for the first part of his career, from 2009 to 2013, he was a starter, right? 4 years for the Rays, and then for Kansas City in his first year there in 2013, part of that James Shields trade and everything like that. So, but it like I mentioned, I feel like it's more often you see a guy go from a starter to a reliever to a closer, that sort of thing, versus the other way around. But you mentioned Wainwright and now Freddie Peralta, guys that are young, guys that went from being relievers as young pitchers morphing into starting pitching.
One of the best trades in Royals history, Will Myers for James Shields and Wade Davis. Man.
Got him a World Series.
Indeed.
And Will Myers, is he with the Padres now?
Yeah. I mean, he's been with the Rays, obviously. He won Rookie of the Year there. And then, he's been with the Padres since. So
unreal. Unreal, you know,
and,
how
you
it
know,
can work out for
a little bit. It was kind of scary there because for a little bit, you know, in that 2013 season, Myers won the Rookie of the Year, and Davis, like you said, had that bad year of starting, and fans were like, oh no, did we, you know, screw this up? Nah. Dayton Moore knows what he's doing. Believe me.
Have faith in him because it appears he is well on the, I mean, it appears he's on track to do a very similar thing once again that we saw during that stretch from 2013 to 2015. Or 16 even, for the Kansas City Royals. Well, that's going to just about do it for us here on a Friday for myself and my co-host,
Matthew Frizzell.
Have a good night, everybody.
See ya!